fighting for America.
Muhammad shows up in a place like Tampico, Mexico, and for $1,500, he gets Mexican identity documents. And so Muhammad becomes Manuel.
Fighting for Idaho.
People think Netanyahu is like Ronald Reagan or Ted Cruz. As far as Israeli politics go, he is not the Ronald Reagan or Ted Cruz of Israeli politics. He's more like the Jeb Bush.
Fighting for you.
Hopefully the younger generation is paying attention and wake up and don't vote for a political party. Vote for the person and what they really, really, really are.
Boise's Mr. Right.
I think she's a new addition to the Miller Militia.
Kevin Miller in the Morning, winner of the 2014 Marconi Radio Award on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
KIDO, Kevin Miller in the Morning. Joining us now, Congressman John Lebutelier. Congressman, good to have you with us.
Kevin, nice to talk to you again. How are you?
You know, you turned me on to your show on Fox News, and I'm addicted to it. Boy, you guys are going back and forth on that thing.
Political Insiders every Sunday night, and it's got a huge audience. We're very proud of it because we think we're the only, I know, we're the only political show anywhere on TV, Kevin, that we tell the truth, we get right into it, we express the indignation that we all feel about both parties, and it's really working. We've got a huge audience. We have the highest rated show anywhere on cable on Sunday, day or night. How about that?
Well, I was going to ask you, how did you end up being a TV star?
Well, I'm not a star, but I've had this idea. It was my idea to do this show. I took it to Fox years ago. They turned it down over and over and over and over again. I kept pushing it. And then, miracle of miracles, about 4 years ago, 2011, I pushed it again and got it on. And it got on the Internet first. We do a version on the Internet on Monday. And then a year later in 2012, they put it on regular TV on Sunday night, and it's just taken off, and it's doing so well. And I thank you for watching it.
No, I was, Sean and Cadell and you, was like I said, last time we had you on, you told us about that, and I've got it DVR'd from now until eternity.
Well, we hope to get our own standalone show pretty soon, because it's a half hour now, but we're really part of another show that's already on. And they just take the half hour, put us on there. But we hope to get the full thing in a month or two. We'll see. Maybe even a full hour show. We don't know. But it's going well.
Boy, that's a lot of hot air.
Well, hopefully we have substance, not hot air.
Hot air and content. Yes, sir. You know, we take a look at the 2016 field. Does any of these folks stand out to you?
I'm not dumping on all of them. I each has their own thing, and they're trying hard. I think none of them yet have really connected with the public. Obviously, it's still early, but it's not too early to connect and get a good message. And that's what they're missing. They don't have a message that resonates with the voters. They're too establishment. They're too much predictable. No one says anything unpredictable anymore. They're afraid of it. And to get noticed, you have to be different. Now, Reagan was different, and Obama was different. Obama wasn't so different in what he said. It's who was saying it. We never had a legitimate contender who was an African-American ever until he came along. And he was his own message, which was, if you want to change, pick me. Unfortunately, the change was a bad change, and it didn't work out. Reagan was a big change back in 1980, and it did work out. It worked out startlingly well. And the Republicans have lived off of Reagan for 25 years, and that's sort of run out now, and they've got to get a new act.
Well, the money primary is going on right now, though, right?
Yeah, and I'll tell you about that. There's too much focus on it. And the media is the one. They focus, who's raising the most money? I ask Doug and Pat all the time, on the air and off the air, this question. And I'll ask you, Kevin, and see if you and I can reach an agreement. Which, if you could only have one, which is more valuable in politics? A lot of money and no big message, but tons of money for your campaign, or a very compelling, unique message, but no money to support it?
I would go with the message.
Absolutely. The message is the key. If the message will cut through all the clutter, and it will attract money. Money will come to it once people start hearing the message, which they'll hear. And there's so many ways to reach people now through the internet and social media and cable and everything, radio, everything. And none of these candidates are working on a message. They're working on this money primary that you mentioned. And Jeb Bush, for instance, is doing a great job raising a lot of money. But he has a terrible message. His message is, I'm my own man. I'm my own man. Well, how does that help the guy in Dubuque to hear that Jeb Bush says he's his own man, which, of course, is a joke because 2 minutes later he brings up his father and his brother in every speech. He's not his own man. And who cares what man he is anyway? What is he doing for me? That's what people want to know.
Well, that's the interesting thing, because you have the interesting aspect, sir, where people are saying, well, we want a winner. If you're the Republicans, John McCain can appeal to a broad coalition. Mitt Romney can appeal to a broad coalition. Do you foresee that argument with Jeb Bush?
Yes, I think that's what's coming. And I don't think it's going to work any better than it worked with those two. The difference is, inside the Republican Party, there is real resistance now to Bush. They don't want him. His numbers are terrible. He's not doing well in the stump. He is doing well in the fundraising that we talked about, but he doesn't connect with the voters well. They don't want another Bush. Even Republican primary voters, Kevin, don't want another Bush. He's got an uphill slog. Now, his number one opponent at the moment is Scott Walker from Wisconsin, who is the hot item inside the Republican Party now. But we got to ask, it's only March of 2015, can Scott Walker stay hot for a year? And I doubt it. And I think it's more likely that he will run into a lot of trouble, some of which will be caused on purpose by Jeb Bush with the $100 million. He will come after Scott Walker. It's already beginning, by the way. And they will tear Scott Walker apart. And I think that's what we saw Romney do 3 years ago. And what we're going to see coming up now is that Bush, like Romney, couldn't win the nomination on his own because he doesn't really fit the party voters very well. So what he does is he takes the money and trashes any other candidate who gets in his way. And that's what happened 4 years ago, 3 years ago. Romney destroyed Santorum, Perry, and some of these guys destroyed themselves, too, Herman Cain. But Romney ran a lot of commercials against Newt Gingrich. He really went after Santorum. I mean, they tore each other apart, and Romney spent all his money on that. So when he finally was the last man standing and had the nomination, he was broke. His campaign was broke, I mean, and exhausted. And he was easy pickings for the Democrats. And we may be headed for that again.
You're accurate about Mitt Romney, but what I don't understand is why was Mitt Romney so tenacious against Gingrich, Santorum, and others, and he really didn't lay a glove on the president, albeit for one or two debates. That we didn't have the Mitt Romney war machine that we saw in the primary and the general.
Well, we had it in that first debate in Denver. I thought that I never saw Romney so good as he was that night. Why he couldn't stay that way for the other two debates and be out on the stump for a couple months like that, I never understood it. But he didn't. And, and by the way, Romney was a better and more attractive candidate than Jeb Bush. If you look at Jeb Bush on TV giving a speech, it's like watching paint dry. He's a terrible candidate. Of the three Bushes, the father, the older brother, and Jeb, I'm telling you, Jeb's the worst of the three as a political candidate. Then you add on this Bush fatigue thing, and the whole thing is no good.
You know, why do you think Mitt Romney bailed out then?
Well, that's a good question. You know, I mean, he, by the way, when he bailed out, he left a slight opening that he could still get back in this race. And who knows? You know, who knows by next fall? This race has moved very quickly to where Bush announced in December and caught everybody off guard. That made everybody accelerate their own decision. Everybody's off and running. Nobody's doing particularly well. Romney drops out. Scott Walker zooms ahead. Bush languishes. If you told me 6 months from now it would be a different looking race than it is now, I'd believe it. I could believe Scott Walker goes back down. John Kasich, the governor of Ohio, gets into the race at that point, and he could zoom up a little bit, maybe. I don't know, but I think that I know Republican primary voters are looking for a great new leader, and they're not yet finding it in this field.
So do the Republicans have a chance? Because, you know, we're if they go with Bush, do you believe, I mean, I know it's really early, but it's going to be Bush v. Clinton.
Well, we don't know that. We don't know. I mean, if you want to say, hypothetically, let's say it is Bush v. Clinton, I think Bush could win that race. I think Hillary is a bad candidate. But I somehow, Kevin, America is a great place. America likes the new iWatch, the new iPhone, the newest car, the newest smart TV, the newest gadgets. New. And I just don't think they're going to go for an old Bush and an old Clinton with policies from the past. I think they want new stuff. And I think we'll have a new candidate. I think the Republicans will have one of these new people. And I think Hillary might not even make it as a Democratic nominee. I could see her imploding in the next year and a half.
Boy, that would there's no plan B for the Democrats, is there?
None. They have no plan B. One guy has a plan B, which is John Kerry, which I mentioned on Fox the other night. I think John Kerry's setting himself up to be the Democrat next year. When and if Hillary implodes, he is sitting there. And he says to himself, it's going to be a foreign policy election. I'm the Secretary of State. I'm going to get this agreement with Iran. I'm going to win the Nobel Peace Prize for it. And I have all these other agreements with Cuba and China and all. Hillary, 4 years as Secretary of State, got nothing done, Kevin. I, John Kerry, in 2 years, boom, 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 all these different deals, Nobel Peace Prize. Baby, I'm the guy to turn to in 2016. That's what he's thinking.
More coming up next at 580 KIDO. Let's get you to work safely and on time. Good morning, Dave.
580 KIDO, Tway Travel, and Miniger Auto Body have something special coming in April. Details soon on 580 KIDO.
580 KIDO, Kevin Miller in the morning as we continue on. Congressman John Louis Lair with us. Congressman, let's continue on with Iran.
Okay.
You've been involved in Congress. You've been at the big decision-making table. Why are we so desperate to cut a deal with the Iranians, considering they don't trust us, they hate us?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think there's two reasons, okay? First of all, Obama and Kerry are the two guys pushing this thing. They each have a slightly different reason. I mentioned before the commercial, Kerry wants the Nobel Peace Prize. And I think if he gets an agreement, he and his Iranian counterpart will probably get the Nobel Peace Prize. And Kerry would use that then next year to try to run for president. That's his motive. The bigger picture is Obama. And I think Obama has always wanted to be what he calls a transformational president. Do something so big that it puts him in the history books, right? So being the first black president puts him in the history books. Obamacare, he thinks, puts him in the history books like the guys that invented Social Security and Medicare. And now his final act is going to be to normalize relations with Iran and bring them back into the community of nations. That's what he thinks. And this agreement is the key to that, plus getting them as a de facto ally in the war on ISIS. And that's what he's pushing for. And that's why I think they'll do anything by the 24th of March to get this agreement. And there will be an agreement. They've set it up so that Congress doesn't have to approve it. So when they say there's an agreement, there's an agreement. And that's the end of it. And that's what they're going to do.
Boy, Iran hasn't honored anything. The centrifuges have continued to grow. It's amazing that it seems like the administration, particularly John Kerry, is just resume building.
I know. And I think that's exactly what he's doing. I think that it's selfish. And they're giving in. They're caving in all the time to the Iranians when, Kevin, we have all the leverage. We've got the sanctions on the Iranian economy that is killing it. And they're desperate, right? And they've come to the table desperate. And yet it's us who act like we're desperate, not them. Crazy.
It is, and I would expect if we were 20 more years down the road and we had a millennial or a Generation Xer who was a president, but you just can't most Americans that I know of can't forget 1979.
Well, no. And by the way, 1979 was the beginning of the Iranian war against the United States of America. And they have never backed down. They've never apologized. They've never given our embassy back to us. They stole it, sovereign American territory, and they took it. That regime is a horrible, corrupt, rotten collection of people. And to think that we could quote, I'm doing those air quotes now, to bring them back into the community of nations when they're gobbling up all the neighboring nations and they're running Hezbollah and Hamas and trying to kill Jews and Christians and, as they put it, exterminate the state of Israel and see a mushroom cloud over Israel. I mean, what in the hell is Obama thinking?
You could say that for their entire foreign policy during this administration.
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't know about all of it, but I mean, I don't particularly disagree with Obama on Afghanistan, for instance. I think he continued the policy, and then he surged a little bit there. Now he's trying to get out. I think that's what most people want. But anyway, on this one, this thing is a crazy way of thinking, and it explains a lot. It explains why he never says we're at war with fundamental Islam, because the regime in Tehran, Kevin, is fundamental Islam, and he doesn't want to attack them while he's negotiating with them. It also explains why he's got such a toxic relationship with Israel, because he's trying to create the impression that the United States has moved away from Israel a little bit, all to induce the mullahs in Tehran to come to the table and do business with us. Crazy, crazy thinking.
It is crazy, and even, I suppose, one step further is, once the deal is signed, they'll continue to not abide by it. But they won't have, as you said, the restrictions of the sanctions that kept them in place.
Well, that's right. Now, the one little fly in the ointment is most of the sanctions that we've put on over the years on Iran are voted on by Congress. They're law, and they have to be voted on by the House and Senate, signed by the president. So part of this deal that Kerry is negotiating is we're going to lift some of the sanctions and more of them as time goes on if they continue to comply with the agreement. But you can't lift the sanctions without Congress voting to lift. And that's the bugaboo and why this letter from the 47 Republican senators yesterday to the Iranian government has caused such a stink bomb, because for a lot of reasons. But number one is, what's going to happen if there's an agreement and the Obama administration doesn't tell Congress what's in the agreement? And I fear this is coming, which is a secret set of side deals, secret letters between the president of Iran and the president of the United States, private understandings of certain things. all of which Congress does not get to see or share in, and nor do you and I and your listeners. So our government negotiates these deals all the time, and then it's a lot of it's kept secret from everybody. Well, if they try that act with this this U.S. Senate, then they're going to get nowhere, because those guys are not voting to lift sanctions until and unless they know what's in that deal.
Well, I think he's running it like he ran the Affordable Care Act.
Yeah, totally. You'll vote for it first, and you'll find out what's in it.
I was surprised by the criticism of the Senate basically writing a letter to the Iranians and reminding them of the limits of the presidential power and calling them traitors and everything. I were you shocked by that?
About the 47 senators?
Yes.
Yeah. I think that thing was bad. I don't think they should have written that letter that way. I think they should have written it to Obama and published it, bought the back page of the New York Times first section. You know, it cost a lot of money, but you buy the whole thing and run the letter there. And everybody sees that. Everybody in the media sees it. The Iranians would see it. Everybody would know that these senators, and they might have been able to get some Democrats to go with them. Because this thing, I tell you, this Iranian nuke deal has really forged interesting alliances inside the Senate, where a lot of Senate Democrats side with Republicans against this nuclear deal. The most famous of which is Robert Menendez, who's about to be indicted by Obama's Justice Department. And Senator Menendez was the chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee up till 2 months ago. And he said something that is unbelievable. He said that the Obama administration appears to get their talking points from Tehran. Now, Kevin, this is a Democrat saying this of Obama and his administration. They're getting their talking points from Tehran. Now, first of all, do you have any wonder why he's about to be indicted?
Well, y'all were talking about that on the Fox News channel. That was quite a topic. I do remember y'all talking about that.
Yeah, that it's either a shot across the bow of Menendez, which is shut up. When we do this agreement, don't say peep or else we'll drop the indictment on you. Or they're so mad at him for what he's already said, they've already decided to indict him. And I don't know which is true, but this thing is not right. It's a prosecution done because of political opposition to Obama's main focus, which is this Iranian nuclear deal. That's his thing that he's caring about more than anything. And here a Democrat levels a very severe criticism at him. And look what happens to him.
Well, and as you pointed out, and I remember, how many of us, maybe because we're partisan, maybe because we're on the side of the righteous, thought Menendez was going to go down 2 or 3 years ago, and nothing came of it, and now these charges are resurrected.
I think Menendez is shocked by it, too, because I think this thing had died down, and they've suddenly revived it, and you really have to wonder what the hell's going on. This thing is not right. And, well, you know, we'll let it play out. And then Doug Schoen brought up the Petraeus one, which is he got a relatively easy deal for sharing classified information with his girlfriend. He gets 2 years probation, $40,000 fine. That's it. That's like a slap on the wrist. And maybe that also is done in order to buy him off, so that he doesn't criticize the Iranian nuclear deal.
More coming up next here at 580 KIDO.
Sean Hannity, weekdays at 3. Now, back to Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Kevin Miller in the morning, Congressman John Leboutelier with us, talking about all the issues that matter here at 580 KIDO. Congressman, what about the future of our country economically? We've talked globally. We've talked presidential politics. How's the economy doing?
I think it's at best a mixed bag. I don't think it's as good as the numbers say it is when they put them on TV. like they say, oh, we got great unemployment numbers. They're not that great because we got so many people still not looking for work or being underworked, underpaid. The Obamacare fiasco, the big legacy of that is it reduced millions of people from 40-hour full-time per week, full-time employment, to under 29 hours part-time employment so that the employer didn't have to give them Obamacare. That's a disaster. And by the way, politically, the Republicans are missing a great opportunity, Kevin, to forge a new relationship with big labor over that issue. Big labor is furious that Obamacare has eroded the number one accomplishment of the labor movement in the United States of America, which is the 40-hour work week, which all of us like. And we all take it for granted, frankly, until Obamacare came along and blew that thing up. And labor's really PO'd at Obama over it. And if the Republicans were smart, they'd reach out to big labor, bring them up to Capitol Hill, have a big meeting, say, you know, maybe there's some areas here we could all work together on this thing to try to change Obamacare for the sake of working Americans. But they haven't done it. They have no imagination for what could be done to make things work better. I think, remember we talked a few minutes ago about what's more important, money or a message? And you and I both agree, having a good message. The message that the winning candidate should have for 2016 is there's something terrible going on in America. Big is bad. Big business, big government, big media, they're all in bed with each other, Kevin, scratching each other's back, enriching each other, helping each other at the expense of everybody else in this country. And I'm saying this as a Republican, and I'm telling you that Wall Street banks, these big business guys, they don't give a damn about you and me. They care about themselves. And that's the big change in America. The level of selfishness and lack of being an American first and instead caring about yourself first, that's the biggest change in this country. And a leader needs to come along and talk about that and say, hey, we got to save this country by working together against these mammoth interests that are screwing us over.
Well, and the issue that continues to resonate in the courts and everything is the issue involving what to do with the illegals. And then you have the president continuing on, even though a judge told him no, and even though it's under advisement, under appeal. Has that ever happened in the history of the Republic where a judge says to the president, stop, and he keeps going?
Well, it often happens that the Supreme Court or the federal courts will send a law back to Congress to fix it, to adjust it, alter it. That happens a lot. And it's a funny thing. Well, for a while, Republicans were hoping that would happen in this case with these subsidies, that Obamacare would be sent back and they'd have a chance now to finally change it, which they didn't have a chance to do before because Democrats ran the Congress. They'd have a chance to fix it, and Obama would be forced by the court to work with the Republican Congress. That would actually be a good thing. But now I'm reading that a lot of Republicans up on the Hill are so despondent, Kevin, over how things are going on the Hill and how badly they're doing running things, they don't want it sent back to them. That if they get Obamacare thrown in their lap, they frankly don't know what they'd do about it. And how they would change it or fix it. I got this amazing story last week that was published about a U.S. senator from Indiana who was in my class when I got elected to the House, Dan Coats, very good guy. And he's up for re-election next year, and he's got to decide whether to run or not. And he speculates on the record, Kevin, in this article, I think it was in Politico, he said, you know, I got to decide whether to run or not, because right now it looks like after 2 months of running Capitol Hill, the Republicans have, quote, hit the wall, as he put it. In other words, they can't run it. They've got the House. They've got the Senate. We won this great victory in November. And here we are 2 months in. We can't run the country. We can't run Congress. We can't get anything done. There is a morale problem like we've never seen before up on Capitol Hill. The Republican Party is a wreck. And until they straighten themselves out, we're in some big trouble.
With respect, how can the Republican Party be in a wreck when they control both houses? And are the Democrats that just that effective at disrupting, derailing things?
No, if the Republicans are so hopelessly divided between the establishment and the Tea Party that they can't get their act in gear and decide what to do. That's the problem. They don't know what to do. And that's why we're 2 months in. They have no immigration plan and no Obamacare plan. The only thing they have and have done, and I give them credit, is they did pass Keystone, but that was easy to do. That was easy to do because the country, I think it was like 70% of the American people favor Keystone. So that's an easy vote for a senator or a congressman to make, to be voting for it. But they don't even have a game plan now that Obama has vetoed it. They don't have a game plan about what to do to still try to get the thing passed, which it still could be. You can make a deal with the White House, trade something for him agreeing to build Keystone. But the Republicans aren't trying to even do that.
Yeah, that is interesting. But you have to wonder then who's going to provide the leadership and whether or not there'll be a coup against the speaker then.
I don't think there will be. I mean, I think that there isn't a natural successor to him, and they're too divided to do a coup. Even though we've all read about it. And you have this other problem, you know, which is a lot of problems. We have a polling done in early in January showed, Kevin, that 60% of Republican voters around the country do not want either Boehner or McConnell leading Congress. So Boehner and McConnell, who have these jobs, have a majority of the public against them, a majority of their own party against them to start out. So that's bad enough. Then you add in the fact that they don't get along. They can't work together. The Tea Party people don't trust either of them. Ted Cruz is more popular among the Republicans than McConnell is. I mean, it's such a screwed up mess. They can't get anything done. The thing is eroding. It will not be long before this lack of accomplishment up on the Hill is going to leak into the presidential campaign. It won't be long before one of these Republican candidates for president is going to start running against the Republican leadership on Capitol Hill. I mean, it's something we've never seen before, but they're going to do it. And that's unique. Can you imagine a Scott Walker or someone, in effect, saying, we got to get rid of Boehner and McConnell? And you talk about a divided party at that point.
Indeed.
Wow.
More coming up next at 580KIDO. Remember, Kevin Miller on Twitter, Kevin Miller at Kevin Miller Show, 580KIDO.com. Great blogs, great videos, great insight. As we move along here, phone number is 580-5436. Let's get you to work safely and on time at 580KIDO.
Glenn Beck, weekdays at 9. Now back to Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
580 KIDO, Kevin Miller in the morning as we continue on. Congressman, I got a question for you. And I was watching your show Sunday night, and which one of you described the president as Nixon on steroids?
That was Pat Caudill. That's a great line. He's very proud of the fact, Pat, is that he was the youngest man on the Nixon enemies list. And of course, that's the gold standard for a rotten administration and an administration abusing their power until this one came along. This one is unbelievable. And none of us can get over it. The stuff they do, and Kevin, the stuff they get away with, you know, investigating the Tea Party, using the IRS. When Nixon tried that, they had an article of impeachment against him for it. Yet this guy does it, and there's not a peep out of anybody, not even really, not much out of the Republicans even on it. Not much, some, but not a lot.
Is it because of what happened the last time with Bill Clinton?
I think it's because he's an African-American left-wing president, and I think that they love that, and they don't want to get in the way of it. I think that's the real reason for it.
Which begs the question, if you're a person of value, of morality, of conservatism, getting your message through the media that, as we've talked about before, makes the coverage on Clinton seem overly objective, when you're taking a look at this bubble, this administration, when it comes to the next presidential candidate, do you think that they'll be in love with the next Democratic nominee as they were with Barack?
Well, I've been wondering that exactly, because right now, right, they are not in love with Hillary. They seem to be giving her a hard time on this email thing and on the foundation donation issue. So it doesn't look like they're in love with her. They apparently, the media has never dug the Clintons that much, the way they do Obama, of course. So I would say no. I would say the next one is going to have a bit of a tougher time. But they're always going to favor the Democrat over the Republican. You've got to know that. That's obvious.
Well, Congressman, as always, we always appreciate it. We'll be watching on the Fox News Channel.
Great. Love being on, Kevin. Let's do it again soon.
Yes, sir. Have a great day.
All right. Same to you. Okay.